This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Independent Comic Book Noise Podcast. It's us, the Marvel Noise Crew. Super Steve Raker. Hey, Kevin Berlwin X.
That's me.
And Phil the Ottawa Otter.
Good day.
We're not sponsored by anyone.
Yes, we're not sponsored by anyone, but appreciate...
Not Fleshlight.
All our
every
listeners.
Podcast was...
We're the Marvel Noise Crew, as some of you may know, but on this show we get occasionally a little cheeky, language get a little blue, so you might want to steer the little kids away from this particular podcast, but check out the fine Marvel Noise podcast for all ages, comic book fun from a Marvel perspective.
Indeed. Thanks, Andrew.
And join our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter.
Except you'd be following us individually. Because I believe that the podcast, unlike Marvel Noise, which does have a
but
Twitter you, handle,
we do you can find that out on our Facebook page. What
exactly.
Our handles are.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I'm not on Facebook.
That's because he's busy reading indie comics.
And going to Disney.
You always start us off with some sort of story of one of your...
It's true, your adventures.
Jaunts, Andrew. What do you got? What's going on in the world of Andrew and Lisa's excellent adventure these days?
Well, I thought I gave the whole story about getting my Seekers of the Weird signed, but then I remembered this is the wrong podcast.
Yeah, you kind of just missed that, didn't you?
Which,
awkward.
Oops. Sometimes, The magic of which podcast we're on slips through. But we did go down to Disney for, they did a special Steampunk Kingdom, which was steampunk artists took Disney properties and steampunk them up, including a Mickey Mouse Rocketeer, a version of the different castles in the properties turned steampunk style. And then in the evening, we went to the El Capitan, which is the Disney theater, and saw the Miyazaki's latest and perhaps last film, The Wind Rises, about the creator of the Japanese fighter, which was a great movie. I really loved it. Not really for the kids, though, even though it's anime. You know, obviously there's a lot of war and violence. You know, the planes were used for some pretty bad stuff in World War II. And while not directly referenced, it's certainly alluded to. And this weekend, we're going to go see The Music Man.
All right. Reading any indie books?
No. Who has time? Oh, no, only joking. What I wanted to bring up, and I know some have criticized our use of referencing prior read books, but I am undeterred because I have to mention Sergio Aragonés Funnies from Bongo Comics, number 12. I know I've talked about this book before. Why I have to mention it is this is the last issue.
Aww.
When you say someone criticizes us, do you mean me?
Yes, I mean it. I kind of pretend like it was someone else and be classy, but if you want to take the low road, we can. I personally blame every single one of you that didn't buy a copy of this book to keep it going.
I bought issue 3.
Yeah, exactly. I blame you, Kevin. He does mention that he's looking to do a volume 2, and he's probably going to be with a different publisher, as of yet undisclosed. And he points out, in his typical humorous Sergio style, that Gru had went through quite a few different publishers in its days.
Yeah,
sure, but this is a Sergio production. He does get colors help from longtime collaborator Tom Luth, and there's also Robert Stanley and Nathan Hamill, who are names I probably should know, but I don't. As some may know, Bongo Comics is essentially Matt Groening took some of his fat Simpsons cash and is publisher of this. So they have the Simpsons license, the Futurama license, and produce a few other comics. I think they might do the SpongeBob stuff.
Right, yeah.
They're by all accounts, a great company to work for. I haven't heard any creators badmouth them. but I also don't necessarily see them at the top of the stacks for a lot of people. I think it's a bit of a shame that it gets overlooked at times, maybe because of the you know, Simpsons Association. But Sergio is one of the masters of the comic book realm. He specializes in putting a lot of crazy detail into the panels, most notably those of you that have ever looked at Mad Magazine, the little doodles in the margins are Sergio. So hopefully at least some of you have one upon a time cracked open a Mad Magazine. Yep. If not, you should at least look at one in a library or something. I mean, it's hard to believe you enjoy comics without at least having read a Mad Magazine at one Uh-oh. Point.
We have, Uh-oh. We have.
Uh-oh.
What? Don't say
I've never read.
There's a lot of things Kevin has an experience.
Yes, true. Kevin,
He also hates good movies.
We hold you guys. You have completely different expectations.
What?
Yes, we don't. Kevin, we don't. Mad Magazine didn't come from Japan, nor Valiant.
Nice. So that's not one thing I'm not covering tonight.
So the book, what's really fun about the Funnies title is it's really packed full of content. Sergio always delivers. So he'll have a couple of his normal kind of humorous stories, some in color, some in black and white. He also always has an autobiographical section, which is my favorite part. This is when he met a famous Japanese actor when he was a kid and then met him later on. And then he has a few like spot the differences and find the two that are the same Where's Waldo style panels. And I just can't believe that at this level of experience he still manages to jam so much into a piece of artwork. It's really incredible. And for those of you that go to San Diego, I recommend seeing him in the quick draw style panels. He's a really funny and smart and very fast with the pen. And Sergio is just great. So I'm excited. I'm hoping Volume 2 comes out from whatever publisher. If I can run it down, I'll get it. I imagine Bongo will be doing a nice collected edition of these 12 issues.
Ooh, I hope so. I hope it's big.
Yeah, his work really stands to be blown up. I know both Steve and I have another one of Sergio's books published by IDW. And that is the Gru Artist Edition.
Absolutely.
But whatever Sergio's doing, it's worth at least looking at it once. Maybe it's not for your thing, but you should at least be aware of him because he's contributed so much to the medium. And I know this is sounding a bit eulogetic, but I just feel bummed that I was really he could just do his autobiography. I mean, I like the other stuff too, but that's the real seller.
That's mostly what it is. Like, there's two or three stories that are just Sergio spinning a story from his past. You know, how he was a walk-on extra on some, you know, old Western movie, and how he accidentally killed Marty Feldman, and all these other things. It's Sergio spinning a tale, and he's a guy you don't get to spend time with, but what a life he's had. And it's very interesting stuff, and it's not all just straight gag stuff, although there's always a good punchline to the story. That's what makes a good story, right?
Yeah, I think he just, and it's so, I'm sure he puts a lot of work in, but the stories flow so effortlessly, even with all that detail. There's nobody quite like him that can, while he puts in all that detail, it never feels crowded in a way. I mean, I guess when he intends that crowded feeling, but it just feels like there's so much there and it really kind of exists. And if you could push back the boundaries, you'd see even more and more. I think it's just a great technique for populating a world and making it feel real is putting so much into it.
He's quite steampunky himself with all of his contraptions that seems like they could work, you know, that he puts into his villages and all that business. Good stuff.
I read the first issue of Dark Horse's Tomb Raider by Gail Simone and Nicholas Daniel Selma. I'm not. I've played a bit of the games, but I never played the reboot, the newest one, and that's what this is continues from, I guess. So there's a couple
young,
parts.
It's like young, inexperienced Lara Croft.
That's one of the problems I have. She's 21 years old, and the point she's at, I don't think a 21-year-old could be at. like all this exploring and stuff. And
does she have the physical attributes of a 21-year-old? Remember Laura Croft being particularly
like she's a little clumsy and stuff at this point, but at the same time, I don't know. I just think she's a little too advanced. But as far as this comic goes, like there's a few characters that show up that are ghosts. I didn't know who they were. I guess they're from the video game, but it didn't bother me at all. But this series basically starts her off in a dream, and she's running from people shooting at her. And there's just some cool jungle scenes and waterfalls. I really enjoyed the art. It was very simple, and I found it very relaxing. And Gail Simone I'm a big fan of, and I thought her writing was good. And for someone who's not a big fan of Tomb Raider, I kind of want to get the next issue.
Is this a limited series, Phil, or does it not say?
It does not say. So as far as I know, it's an ongoing.
Yeah.
From what I remember, yeah. And then the ending was kind of cool. Like they're in this desert, and all of a sudden this huge tidal wave comes out of nowhere, and they're dealing with some supernatural stuff, just like in kind of like in the games. And but my favorite parts of her were always when she's not stuck in a tomb. I like when she's out in the jungles and things like that.
Well, that so was I that really last game, right? Was her on an island, like in in the woods in the jungle?
Yeah. But I can't get over the young thing though.
Is she wearing her iconic shorts and the black top and everything?
Most of the issue, no. Pretty much her uniform now is a white tank top and like khakis. So basically not shorts, now it's pants. Yeah.
I mean, this
like
this...
she's not drawn, she doesn't have big boobs. Like she's not the old
right
Croft. Like they definitely made her more appealing for females.
There was like 50 or so issues of Tomb Raider comics with Top Cow. Like Andy Parks did a lot of art on it, and
I remember like in a couple issues of those, but yeah,
they crossed over with Witchblade and stuff at times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was all part of that universe. But yeah, I would say this is worth picking up. I'm gonna be on it for now anyway.
I've got the first ish, but I haven't read it yet. Mm-hmm. I'll definitely be checking it out. Kevin, what you been reading while you've been incapacitated?
Nothing.
All right, sit down, son. Well,
yeah. Thanks for contributing.
Yeah. Frank.
I read something that Andrew also read, since I got the digital...
I read a bit of it, too.
I didn't know you had read some of the punk.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of the writer, A., and I love the post-apocalyptic type stories, so this is right up my alley.
I think I know the artist from like an old Oni Press series that never finished. It was a weird thing where like this, it was like this guy had stumbled into the Bermuda Triangle in a ship, and then he came back, and the world wasn't the same world that you know. It was like there was a world on top of a world, and he was trying to get back to the other world. So that's where I know the artistry from, I'm sure. But anyways, yeah.
You get your facts straight.
I had bought the first issue of the Bunker number one when it was a guided view comic from Comixology, which apparently you can't purchase anymore. But some interesting differences now that it's moved to Oni Press for, I guess, just print... distribution.
I only have the print issue, so I'll be speaking from the
me too
real comic book fans perspective. But go on, Kevin.
All right, I thought you were going to do the creators.
Joshua Hale Fialkoff, who started in the sort of indie horror world, burst into Marvel and DC, had some work in the New 52. Not sure he's still over at the Distinguished Competition. But he most recently was on the Alpha book for Marvel. And I don't know what else he...
He does the Ultimate stuff right now.
Yep. Oh,
yes, the Ultimates. That's right. But he was on... he had the Vampire one for the New 52 that I was enjoying. Vampire, was that the title?
Yep.
Yeah, that really was enjoying amazing.
And Last of the Greats.
That was awesome. He's very good at the twisted stuff, like
a tumor.
He's got a twisted mind for sure.
He doesn't like do a Green Lantern book or something, since they have like six or seven or eight of them
at one point. But
oh, that's probably what it was. How about that?
But this isn't a DC podcast, is it?
Well, just giving some background on
it. And this book isn't about my bunker, is it?
Oh, nope. That's right. We forgot the obvious pun. Yes, this is not about Steve's bunker that has hundreds of thousands of comics in it. No, this is about something I think a little scarier.
Yeah, and this bunker is also sadly missing action figures.
Yeah.
But we've got illustrated, colored, and lettered by Joe Infernare. And it's kind of interesting. The lettering feels really... The font they chose was kind of, in the first bit, I thought was kind of weird. Did it stand out to either of you guys, that sort of slightly cursive style?
Yeah, I was going to say, does it read better in print? Because I have to, like blow it up to full monitor screen size to get, like, a comfortable read on the handwritten stuff, since it's not traditional.
I thought it was a bit... I mean, I can kind of read it, but it does slow me down. I wasn't a huge...
Yeah, it slows me down, too.
Chosen more of a just a typical font. Sometimes I think you can overthink. Not that it detracts, but anytime we're talking about the lettering, it's probably not to the book's benefit.
Yeah. Unless you're one of those lettering nerds.
Well, I mean, you know, who doesn't follow Joe Caramagna on Twitter?
I know. There is a lot that goes into lettering. I find it interesting, too, that the original digital was in black and white, and then they colored this up for the print copy. And
what do you like better out of the two?
It's kind of hard to say, because even though I kind of don't like the guided view on Comixology, since it was originally in that format, like a panel in the comic will seem smaller in the comic than it was when you're reading it in the guided view, because like you would see an infected zone. Here it's just like one of six panels on a page. But when you're reading the original digital, it's like it pops as like one splash page panel and you're like, oh man. But it doesn't really have the same effect in the comic. It's like things have been repositioned and stuff, so I kind of liked that feeling, like that surprise of some of the devastation and different things that were going on. Like, it doesn't have that same thing, but it's a different experience. It's colored, and like it works well as they cut it together, but I kind of wonder how it's going to feel going along. Like, it's not going to have that same thing to compare it to, and maybe it'll use like the print page better than it did for this issue.
To be fair, the coloring is a very light kind of shading. It's mostly
it's just
like each panel might have a couple of tones.
Like it almost looks nicer in some areas when it was in black and white, but
That's why I was wondering. I thought maybe like there's a post-apocalyptic scene, which I'm very happy it's colored, where the body's burning. I love that panel. But some of the other scenes I thought maybe I'd like better in black and white.
Well, some of the scenes are all... You could almost see what it looked like in black and white, like where characters are talking and it's just a little bit of yellow on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it... I don't know. It's kind of an interesting experiment that I got to see it both ways. And then...
I think I would have been fine. Is the black... Are there any gray tones or anything? Like, or is it just straight... Like, has it kind of got a wash to it or anything? Because the colors in it are kind of done... Like, the textures come through the colors. Like I said, it's like kind of tones almost painted over, kind of.
Yeah, well, it has sort of that scratchy quality to it. I don't really know like what you would call that, but... Since it's not...
There is nudity in the book, too, for those of you that are opposed to that in your comics.
Well, yeah, that was in the second half, I believe.
Don't be afraid of your body or anybody else's.
Did you close your eyes, Kevin?
No, I did not. And I made sure not to read it somewhere else, in inappropriate places, though.
Yeah, you gotta be careful sometimes.
Yeah, go. I'm
That's practical advice right there.
That was Steve's comment. I perfectly feel that if you want to be afraid of your body, you go right ahead. But probably everyone's already familiar with this book. The reason I went and picked it up was it's been pretty well flogged to death on every sort of comics media, which is a good thing when a digital indie book, which then gets picked up for print, gets so much press coverage. But as noted, when you have a name writer who's worked for the big two and other companies, it's not quite the rags to riches underdog story, but it's not like he's Kirkman either. And this tells the story of four friends who are actually more than four. Sorry, strike that. Five friends who are heading down, and they end up, the reason there's full, well, it's, there's going to be some spoilers. So, but the five friends are going to bury a time capsule, and they find this bunker, which is nowhere near as cool as the Steve Raker bunker. And in it, they find letters written from the future. And obviously they're incredulous about the authenticity, but the letters contain personal information, which seems to be impossible to have derived from any other source other than someone who knew them, because there's an event that one of the characters didn't tell anybody, that only like two people in the world know. But one of the characters doesn't have a letter, and so you can surmise that maybe, you know, that the reason should be pretty obvious. But one of the things I appreciated for this comic is I first tried to read it after a long day of work, and that was kind of a mistake. They've really made an effort of putting this puzzle pieces out, so you kind of have to pay attention. Like a lot of comics, you can just kind of bebop along and look at all the naughty bits and laugh and giggle and everything. But this thing, if you want to get something out of it, you have to pay attention. Or at least that was my feeling. Kevin, how did you take the density of the material?
Yeah, there's a lot of clues and piecing of things together and all that. But that's because you have the present, you have the future, and then the narration at the same time. So you got to keep a few things straight while you're reading it. It's not like a fight scene. Like, there's a lot of dialogue, there's a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of relationships and like future relationships, and then the past, and then what the letter is telling you is going on, and like a lot of stuff. And in the bunker looks to be as well stocked as Steve's bunker, or how I imagine Steve's bunker to look, anyway.
No way. They are, as I said before, they're sorely missing action figures. And I don't see.
Well, I suppose boxes. In one of those boxes there could be some, but probably not.
If they're not out on display, then what's the point?
Exactly. At least we agree on that point.
Well, how did you like it? Did you not like it? You're being carefully critical.
Yeah, like I remember hearing about it and going, okay, enough people are talking about it. But I was also leery at first because you're like, oh no, is this going to just be a zombie apocalypse? Like I need another zombie story. Like there's not a lot of superhero stories or a lot of action stories or whatever have you. You know, I just am like, I don't know. But yeah, as you get into it, I think I'm really enjoying it and all the different stuff. Like, if you're into mysteries and all those different things. I just wonder, I guess I start playing the long game and going, how long is this going to go on? And, you know, like, if they're going to do, like, they find messages from the future. So I'm like, are they going to actually carry this out? Or, like, this could be a long-running thing if they don't all group together right away and say, yes, we're going to do all this stuff, and it's going to be awesome, or they go about things a different way. Because there's a lot of time jumps, so you could just jump a lot of stuff, or you could get pretty in-depth on everything.
Now, Phil, it sounded like you might have bailed a little bit. What was your takeaway?
I just didn't have time to read it, but I only read to the part where you find out who wrote the first letter. And so I think that's the first chapter, maybe. But I really enjoyed it, but I only got a taste, really. But it's something I definitely want to continue reading.
Well, I got to say, it has a lot of...
Well, I'm a fan of Lost, and I find it like it has that feel, like all the mysteries. And
right.
And I like cluing everything together.
Yeah, that's a good example. Or even like Revival, where there's quite a few things going on.
I like that kind of stuff. Mysterious stuff. Put together the puzzle.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make an open allusion to Lost when they find the bunker in the first place.
So yeah, that's right.
Use it.
That's right.
But what's interesting is, as you might have guessed, I don't think there's more than like about a half page spread on this thing. But it doesn't. It's not like it stands out or it's absent or missing. I think the storytelling flows really well, but it is interesting when you read these things, because in the back of your mind you're thinking, I wonder if they're going to have some big gateway fold out, and then they don't even have a 3/4 page spread. But I don't know how you do that on the digital front anyways. But I thought it flowed, you know, it is super dense, but there's no problem with the storytelling in the paper form. Yeah. Like I said, I didn't try the digital.
And only this first issue is like over 40 pages, so the other ones will be smaller doses. So because it's a lot of reading, it'll probably be a little more of a break on you.
Yeah, well, just, I wonder if some of that is set up too. That's why there's so much information, like as they get into things. But if they keep the like some of the narration going or other things.
I really want that page, though, of the body on fire. I would love that page.
Mm.
I think that's the best colored page. Like, it stands out from the other ones. It doesn't look the same.
Yeah, I wonder if there's... Like, I don't know how the art was produced. Like, if there's a black and white, like, original of the... of how it was done digitally. And then when they cobbled it together into, like, a print copy, if there would be, like, a separate version. Because you wouldn't think you would... If you drew it out yourself, you wouldn't think you would have cut that apart and glued them together to make the print copy after you had your digital.
Well, there's a lot, as you said, there's just so much clues and time jumping and everything. It was just, like I said, my mistake that after a long, you know, 12-hour day or whatever, it wasn't the book to grab.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy, like, when I went with it with fresher eyes, it was more enjoyable, but it's just a lot of times, a lot of my comic reading lately has been end of the day after working in the salt mines, flipping through some funny books to sort of unwind. And this is not that kind of book. I mean, and not all books should be. It's something that you really got to engage the material. But did we convince you, Super Steve? Or are you happy with your own bunker?
I'll have to check it out.
And I assume you've been reading stuff.
I have. You guys have gotten me on the reading number ones bandwagon from the Marvel Boys bits. And I just have been got a few different number ones tonight. One is, actually they both are from Image, but one I'm going to mention here is by Jonathan Ross, who is the BBC TV host who did the Chasing Ditko, Discovering Ditko documentary years ago, and drawn by Ian Churchill, who has yet again changed up his style. This time, I think, is my favorite incarnation I've seen of the evolution of him as an artist. It's the best of his own style, I think, mixed with kind of like a Juan Jose Rip vibe of doing like ultra thin line detail stuff. And the book is called Revenge. And like I said, there's just one issue that's been out. It's the story of a guy, Griffin Franks. He is a large man. He is a statuesque, big-built guy. He's a washed-up action hero. Not washed up because his movies don't sell, but washed up because he's like in his 70s now. And he's like Roger Moore still playing 007, right? He's like, he's got to give up the reins. It's starting to get ridiculous. So he's got a hot wife. He's managed to, in the middle towards tail end of his career, come up with a hit movie franchise, The Revenger. And this next Revenger movie that they want to make is going to star this other big guy who is going to be the Revenger's son. And obviously they're setting it up to be a legacy thing where the next movie it'll be just this guy and they're going to get rid of poor Griffin Franks, you know? But with this hot wife he's got, he's like, he keeps himself thinking that he's younger than he is. He just can't let go of of his youth and the Hollywood life, if you will. And he has kind of a Doctor Strange or Doctor Doom, Ancient One, hears of a, you know, a foreign magic man, if you will, who can work some wonders. And it happens to be a surgeon in a foreign country who can revitalize his youth by peeling away the skin of his face and replacing it with, like, youthful scar tissue and stuff. And he's, you know, he's like a Dr. Moreau type. He's got some weird grafted creature that is like his Igor that works with him, and he's shown that he can do some pretty whacked out stuff. So this guy throws his chips on the table, and he is going to go undergo the procedure, but it's a trap. And without revealing too much stuff, I'll say that he is horribly tortured and mutilated. So much so that as the betrayal that led him to this path is revealed, he has a moment during his torture where he determines that Griffin Franks is dead, and now there is only, you guessed it, the Revenger. He's going to literally become the character from his movie at 73, horribly mutated and tortured. He's out of his element. He's in a foreign land. He's totally incapacitated. It's going to be interesting to see how he follows through on what I'm guessing is going to be a violent and horrifically graphic revenge story with the way that the art is drawn. And there's boobies. This is an interesting visually book, and I think the storyline is pretty straightforward. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. And I'm going to see how it is delivered.
I think the color work on the book is particularly nice. They have a really bright... we mentioned spoilers. So they remove the skin from his face, and so there's the underline, all the kind of muscles and everything, and it's a really bright red that kind of has this drippy quality. And when he's in the green nutrient bath, I kind of like the look of it. But for me, I couldn't get into the tone of it. There's a lot of, I mean, it's a bit, I guess it just feels too much in some places on the nose.
You don't like boobs?
I don't like boobs. I think that in the sense that it wants to be a parody, but the problem is it's not, like, these guys are still making these ridiculous acts. Like, they had Die Hard where they brought the guy's son, and, like, all these things are kind of existing. I don't know how they could have made it more. It feels like it wants to be a parody at times, but it's too on the nose.
Yeah, but doesn't that help you, like, understand the guy, like, very quickly without having to get too much into his character? Oh, he's that guy. He's a Stallone type. You know what I mean? I don't. It made it easy for me to get into the story without having to figure out what made this guy tick. I can guess. You know what I mean?
Right. That part I just felt like it really dragged it out. I would have liked to seen. I would have ended this where this book ends would have been like the first third, as far as I would have concerned, and really got into where this is going, because it just felt a little belabored. Like, the dream sequences were fine, but it felt like I got it from one, and that the rest of them just seemed to be padding to stretch this thing out a little bit. Like you say, we know who this guy is. I don't need the. I mean, I did like the twist, but it just felt like now we're going to beat that twist into the ground for a little while. And for me, I mean, maybe I just got old comics on the brain, but I just felt like this could have been, we could have moved to that much, much quicker and sort of gotten into the push this thing in a much, I think with this kind of crazy parody-like thing, pushing the speed up would have really tickled my fancy.
I think these double
not unlike
spreads.
When we talk about like the prison pit thing. One of the things that is it just going at 100 miles an hour? Like,
well, I thought you were going to talk about the guy jerking off again.
No, well, you got to go slow here, though. There's so much detail. You can't go. I mean, you don't want to whip through it because those double page spreads that you're talking about that are these dream fantasy trip out in the middle of pain and blood like montage-y pages. The original art of that is going to look sick.
They are, like I said, I can't fault Churchill, and I like the colors, and I just feel like I could have been happy with one of the, like, one scene of that. I didn't need the whole book full of, like, I know who this guy is. I know pretty quickly who he is, and it felt like it was just going over stuff that I already knew. And so I think maybe, like I said, if that had been the first third and gotten to wherever this is going to go, because I still don't really know where this is going, and while I think it's very pretty, I'm not interested enough to continue to find out. Whereas if they'd twisted that, made the turn and see, well, is this really going to work for him? Is it not? Is it all a dream? Is it what more of an indication and less about who this guy is? I think that would have hooked me.
Find out next-ish.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother. But
I thought it was a good book.
But there is a lot. Like
I thought it looked cool.
Is cool. Mm. And I think Phil, you dig it. Like,
I picked it up. I just haven't read it yet.
I just don't know if there's quite enough. For me, there's not enough story pushing it forward.
Phil, what else you been reading?
Well, I read something really, really awesome, which one of you might have read, I imagine. The two volumes of Extermination by Boom Studios, Simon Spurrier, whatever is it, the writer.
Hey, we just talked about him on another podcast we do.
Jeffrey Edwards is the artist. Did you guys read any of that?
No. I read some of the issues. I did not read the trades.
Okay. Well, it was 8 issues and split into 2 trades. I think if it's only 8 issues, it should be 1 trade. But either way, I really enjoyed the series. Basically, think of it like Batman and Lex Luthor are in a post-apocalyptic world. And they've teamed up and they have to work together to survive. And they're button heads a lot. And the way the villain is written, the Lex Luthor type guy, you end up loving him and definitely being on his side. And it's them trying to fix the world, basically, like one last go at it against this alien race that can make these things from, I guess, their minds. And it flashes back and shows that the Batman character had this ongoing fight with the Superman type character and how it's connected to all this. It's really neat. There's one scene that's amazing, my favorite scene, where they find a group of humans and they're wondering where they're getting all this food from. And they end up finding out that it's one of their old superhero pals that has a healing factor, and he has all these chunks cut out of his legs and everything, and they've been eating him the whole time. Like there's some shocking cool stuff like that. I was really satisfied with the ending, the art. I really enjoyed it a lot and would recommend you guys picking that up.
I remember thinking the art was very solid, like regular Big Two style superhero looking art.
Yeah, but I thought it worked well for the story. Like,
Right. No, I meant that as a compliment. Sometimes some of the indie books, when they're doing superheroes, it can be a little... I mean, that's a particular skill. And I thought that book visually would have been at home at either of the Big Two.
Yeah. I find the second book looks a lot better, for sure. And that's by a different artist, V. Ken Marion. So the second book art, I guess you didn't even see that art because you only read the first few issues probably, yeah?
I picked up, actually, I think it was maybe like 2, 3, and 4 or 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, so that's the first trade. Yeah.
Distribution out here is really, even though they're based in Southern California, mm-hmm. It seems like they're not heavily stocked in a lot of the stores. So I know with a few series I've had, you know, trouble where an issue will drop out. Or I'll have to hunt it down in another shop or something.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good twists and turns in this comic. So definitely it's action-packed from the start to the end.
And I think trade would be the way to go because also I'm pretty sure their books are usually $3.99 too.
Yeah, and the trades are $15 American.
All right, the other Image number one book that I've got was called One Hit Wonder. And this one is written by a foreign comics fanzine magazine. I guess it wasn't a fanzine. I guess it was a full-blown, regular published comics books news magazine, the Comic Box. And he was the editor-in-chief of that magazine. And now he, instead of succeeding in getting that magazine published in the States, probably for not that good of a turnaround given the state of publishing magazines in this country. He instead became a comic book writer, and he managed to get paired with Ariel Olivetti for art. And if you like Olivetti's stuff, then you will like this book. I know I did, mainly for that reason. The writer's name is Fabrice Sapolsky, with a Y, not an I. And what One Hit Wonder is a ridiculous kind of a romp where you just have to go with it and enjoy Olivetti's visuals, because it's 1-2 punches of over-the-topness. One Hit Wonder is about a Hollywood bit actor turned hitman, and he's a Hollywood hitman and blows his cover on the first murder by doing it on camera during a scene that he's enacting with a psychiatrist, and shoots him dead right there at the end of the scene. And then it goes on to him getting his next job, and of course there's always a dame, and then he has to is he going to kill the dame or befriend her, and they go on the run together, but he still is planning to kill her, and we're going to see where it goes from there. But I found it to be visually as appealing as the best of Olivetti's work, and again, the story pretty easy to follow along with, and it's pretty gruesome with all these little shock moments that keep it moving along, I thought.
And it's there's also nudity in this book. I think the another element of it was, I think he was a child star who his star kind of dimmed a little bit.
Yeah.
At least that was in the dialogue. There's some mysterious benefactor / agent that he is in contact with who we don't see. I imagine that's going to be the twist at some point, who's revealed to be sort of behind him. And they also thought it was interesting they include 2 pages of deleted scenes in the back, but the deleted scenes are a different artist.
No. That's him in doing his pencil work, not the, isn't it?
Well, they have this directed by John.
Oh, yeah. Okay, like he did the storyboarding. Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's a different, I mean, it's super similar, but it's a different, I don't know what it is. I thought I liked Olivetti, but the art here just didn't click with me.
Really?
And that's what left me. I mean, it's certainly very pretty, but I don't know. I keep coming back to the, at times, some of the transition from panel to panel is where it leaves me with the facial expressions. Sometimes it feels like they're kind of almost snapshots as opposed to sort of comic world where they sort of, the panel transitions happen more in my head, where here it seems almost like they're like a photo comic.
Yeah,
in a
yeah.
way, which speaks to his strength, but I guess I don't enjoy that because I like more the idea of a movement that's conveyed.
I love his sense of color. I love his flesh tones. He can do flesh tones and light brown hair and have it stand out from each other. You know, he can, and he isn't afraid to do what I love about comic book color, which is put red against blue. Put, you know what I mean? Even if it's the redhead and her red shoes and her red purse, red car, but she's wearing blue, he's wearing blue. So it's just things bounce off each other. And the nightclub, the way they do the lighting in there, I really like his sense of color. His flesh looks warm to me.
The other thing is, especially in the night scene with the man and the woman, the characters seem almost like cutouts, like pasted into the background in a way. And it just felt like the background was done somewhere else and these characters were overlaid like color forms or something. They don't feel, it feels kind of flat and not part of the, like there's different elements that were laid down in a strange way. But it's nothing against the fault of his skills. It's just for me, I guess it doesn't read comic booky. I want more emotion and sense of transitions, I guess. But and also the story didn't really, I mean, it wasn't bad or anything. It just didn't seem like it was really, I think this is a book that's going to run on the art, like if the art is what you like. Although there is a potential for a twist.
Kevin, how about one more to bring us home?
Oh, I might have two tied together. How's that?
Fire away.
I was looking for something different in my, recovering from my stupor after a period of a couple days of sickness there, taking away from my valuable comic reading time on the weekend. So I'm like looking for something to pop, and then you read some things. They're good. You enjoy stuff like Shadow Man and everything, but I don't know, sometimes you run into comics and you're like, you don't want to judge them for the wrong reasons. Like, you don't want to go, okay, I really like those first five issues, and then there's like a change of direction or a new creative team or whatever. And then you go, well, I really want it to be like the old stuff. Like, the new stuff is good. There's nothing wrong with the new stuff. You just really enjoy the old stuff, even though it hasn't been that long. Like, issue 5, and then it was like on, now it's on issue 14. So the title went from, I don't want to say like a superhero book, but it went from something more like that to like a Vertigo-ish supernatural, more supernatural book.
That's the way it should be.
But I really like the early stuff. It's not like it was superhero, it's just something about that early stuff. So by the time you get to issue 14, stuff is revealed. Maybe it's because I don't know that was an intention of the original writer. Because things are laid down like, oh, this guy was in the foster homes and stuff like that, and he went from home to home and all that. And you didn't learn a lot about the character that would become Shadow
Man.
What
character? You never said what character.
Shadow Man.
Okay, now you said it.
No, I said it before.
No.
I think I did.
No, you didn't.
Roll back the tape! Anyhow.
You said it, but you said you could talk about that, but then you started talking about this, but then this
but
ended
this
up being
that. This is that.
Exactly.
Is that.
And here we are.
Anyhow. Get back on my track.
Sorry, I'm a heckler, I think.
I think so.
He's at his best as a heckler.
I think so. I'm sorry.
But there's, like, the character keeps to himself. And, like, other people, I know some of the criticism of people can't relate to that. But I guess there's something in me where I can relate to that. Like, I don't give out details about everything. And then some people find that strange. And then they're like, oh, you know, Andrew says, oh, you're mysterious or anything. So when I see a character in a comic like this, I don't think this is strange. It might not be the best way to develop a character, though. So by the time you get to issue 14, and all of a sudden he has like this, well, it shouldn't be all of a sudden, but he has a violent streak, and he starts beating people up, and you're like, well, that came out of the blue. But you really didn't find out what happened in his childhood, like when he was moving from home to home and all this different stuff. I'm like, that stuff was all possible. But maybe if it was, I don't know, something about it, it just bugs me. I'm like, I'm enjoying this book, but I really enjoyed it more before. But there's nothing wrong with it. But I feel weird about it. Because I'm just like, well, can we, like, sort of just, like, tweak this a little bit? Like, there's still some mythology going around. I don't know. It's just kind of strange. But anyways, that's what led me on my journey, because I'm like, well, do I really want to talk about that? Like, it's interesting in the way you approach comics and everything. But I want something that really pops, and I go, this is awesome. Why haven't I seen this before? Everyone should be reading this. So maybe a miracle. I don't know. But I'm like, well, what if I try about one of these things that I bought, like, a while ago on Comixology, and it was something that I don't think is in print or has been translated, at least hasn't been for many years, for North America, from Japan, of course. Because, you know, that's where you go if you want something, you know. You want something to pop. So I find this thing called Kamen Rider by Shotaro Ishinomi. So I'm like, okay, this looks like a speed racer type of thing. It opens up. This guy is being, like, inducted into the esteemed Shocker organization. And then it goes off into this guy's like this great racer and everything. Apparently, he's also a good biologist in university. He's racing down the road. These cars come racing at him, and he's like, "Oh, what's this?" He gets into a horrible accident, and you're like, "Okay, that didn't go so well." And then he wakes up, and like he's a cyborg now, and like this computer is talking to him, and it's like, "Oh, you're gonna be doing all these evil things for me, and we're gonna like destroy the world. We have footholds in all these organizations and all this stuff." And he's like, "What? I don't want to be involved in this." And he says, "Well, you don't really have a choice. We haven't performed surgery on your brain yet, so you can still use everything on the neck up, but we control your body, and you've been unconscious for a week, and we've altered you. You're no longer a human, and you will do our bidding." And the computer's like laughing when he's like, "No, we should be going for a world peace. That's what the world needs now," and everything. And just to prove to him that he's a cyborg, since he doesn't believe it, they're going to run through 50,000 volts of electricity through his body. What they don't realize is that triggers all the stuff they've added into his body when he became a cyborg, and he's able to break free. So I'm like 23 pages in, he's like trying to get out of his facility, and I'm like, "This is nuts!" I'm like, computers are laughing, talking to him, all this nuts of stuff is going on. I'm like, "I gotta read more of this." I'm like, "This is crazy." Like, I'm just thinking, like, this would have been like a 6-issue story or something in American comics. I'm like, that's a lot of nuts of stuff to just be cramming into a few pages.
Wow. Sounds Deathlocky.
That's probably why I like it too. But he also, this writer also has another series where it's like kids that are like turned into weapons of mass destruction, and then they become heroes or some kind of crazy thing like that. So I'm like, obviously there's some kind of cyborg, weird, traumatic events, fixation or whatever, but I definitely want to read more.
And what's the name of this again? It's Kamen Rider?
Kamen Rider.
Huh?
Another series is, I think, Cyborg 09 or Cyborg 9, however you would pronounce it.
All right.
So yes, very interesting.
But no,
really
boots.
Want to read more.
Wild.
Yeah, it broke our breast streak there. Yeah.
I had a backup where it was a vampire that bangs a serial killer, but I didn't get to it.
Sadly.
Kevin, color
there
or
was
black
no
and white?
Nudity in this one. I know Andrew likes to say, "And there was nudity."
Are they color or black and white?
Black and white. I think the first few pages were in color because it sort of has more of a painterly gray tonish type of thing, but yeah, they didn't do it in color.
You know, I just think people should know if that's a factor that turns them off, they should avoid the books.
Well, yeah, but then they'll be avoiding The Walking Dead, so that would be kind of weird because it's like the most successful comic in like years.
Yeah, but if you don't want to see boobs in your comics, you shouldn't see boobs in your comics. You live in a land of choice. Or if you only want to see boobs in your comics. Or if you only want to listen to boobs talking about comics.
My baby tall. precious.